After hauling everything up to the apartment, Anya was finally reconnecting with her email. Bart stood in the middle of her tiny living room like a big tree.
Can I borrow a sleeping bag?
Startled, Anya looked up from her computer. Bart had taken off his coat, and his pistol was visibly holstered on his hip.
Planning a vacation?
No, I'm staying here for the night and you only have one bed.
Did I miss the part where I invited you for a sleepover?
There was an implicit invitation when you left dead guys in Prague.
I had to leave them. They'd never have cleared customs.
I know you're tired. You're making bad jokes.
I'm going to be fine.
With me here, you'll be finer.
You can't stay here forever.
You're right. I've got to throw on the Batman suit and get up early to fight crime in the morning. But for tonight, I can be here and not worry about you.
You're not exactly bulletproof yourself.
Let's just hope I don't have to be. Humor me. I'm tired after carrying all that luggage.
Anya got up and located a plush sleeping bag and gave it to Bart.
Here. You'll have to tuck yourself in.
Gee, thanks, Mom.
Bart laid out the sleeping bag in the corner.
Will the TV bother you?
No.
Good. I can catch the rest of the Yankees game and compare notes with Wally in the morning.
You going to see Wally?
To let him know to keep an eye out for you and to make sure he still has my cell number.
Bart picked up a small bag from the floor. Anya didn't recognize the bag.
That's not mine.
It's mine. Shaving kit, change of clothes, clean underwear.
Always prepared.
My mom trained me well. Take it you're going to be up for a while?
I slept on the plane, and I've got some research I want to do.
Bart took out his toiletry bag, a pair of gray sweatshorts, and a t-shirt, then headed to the bathroom. Anya turned and put her face back into the computer. While waiting for her flight out of Prague, Anya had logged on to the archaeology sites she often used for research. She sent out queries regarding Nephilim and paintings of them. She weeded through the discussions, finding most of it centered around horror movies, some good and some bad, and the mythology that the Nephilim were children of fallen angels and human women. It wasn't helpful, but it was interesting. There was also conjecture that the Nephilim were a race of giants mentioned in the Bible, and that the flood had been caused to wipe them and their wicked ways from the earth. Anya leaned back in her chair and tried to get comfortable. Her mind kept pulling at the mystery. She kept thinking about Garin and Rue and wondering if they were all right. More angels in paintings and statuary were mentioned. She started scanning those entries, and one instantly grabbed her attention.
Don't know if this helps, but there's a legend about a painting of a Nephilim that the Medici family was interested in. Cosimo de' Medici supposedly sent an emissary to retrieve the painting from Constantinople during the siege by Ottoman forces under Mehmet II. Would love to talk to you more about this. Can we meet for chat?
The time frame sounded right, and Garin had mentioned the fall of Constantinople. Anya sent the email and continued to prowl restlessly through the internet. Anya glanced over. She hadn't even noticed when Bart had laid down. He was out cold on the sleeping bag, lit by the blue glow from the muted television. Anya got a blanket from the closet and spread it over Bart. He was a good friend, and she felt badly that he was sleeping on her floor rather than at home in his own bed. With all the artifacts and books she had crammed into the loft, Anya barely had room to live there herself, much less the luxury of a guest room. Bart wasn't like Rue and Garin at all, Anya thought. He wouldn't ever leave her in the lurch the way those two had so often. Bereft of energy and still full after the meal at Tito's, she decided to head to bed. The old man's silent words filled her thoughts. Anya Creed, the world is going to end soon. Garin got out of the cab in The Hague and knew he was being watched. He reached up to the earpiece that connected him to the security team he'd placed inside the city.
I'm being spied on.
Yes, sir. We expected that. We're looking.
Garin didn't think Saladin would have been able to find him so quickly. Since leaving Prague, Garin had changed identities 4 times as he traveled ever closer to his destination. But Saladin wasn't the only one who might be interested in whatever prize Rue was after.
Yes?
Call off your men. It's only us here.
Garin stopped and looked around.
You see me?
And your men, yes.
How many men?
So far, 5.
Garin had 8 men flanking him. After being surprised in Prague, he'd decided not to take any chances for a time. Still, Rue spotting 5 of them was impressive.
Where are you?
Where I said I'd be.
Garin looked up at the second-story window of a building a half-block down. A small French restaurant occupied the first floor. Rue appeared in the window for the briefest instant and quickly stepped back. He held a phone to his face. Even though he'd said no one else was there, the old man obviously wasn't taking any chances.
Don't dawdle.
Angry, Garin pocketed the phone and headed for the building. An immaculate maitre d' approached Garin.
Would you like a table, sir?
He's with me.
Garin turned to see Rue standing nearby. Dressed in slacks, a windbreaker, and a golf shirt that made him look like a casual diner, the old man stood near the door. From the way the jacket hung, Garin knew that Rue carried a pistol in a shoulder holster. He led Garin toward the wall farthest from the windows.
You should have had that jacket tailored.
That would have been a waste of money.
Ever the skinflint. And you're sitting on more money than you'll ever spend.
No, it's just that I don't see a reason to advertise my affluence to call forth pickpockets and muggers. We've got enough problems.
Rue pointed his chin at a nearby table. Garin stared at the woman seated there. She wore a light peach blouse that accentuated her dark skin. She was stunningly beautiful. The two men walked over to join her.
You didn't mention you had company.
She's an old friend. Jennifer? This is Garin Braden. Garin, Jennifer Bailey.
It's nice to meet you, Mr. Braden.
Garin captured one of her hands and kissed it, bowing slightly.
Aren't you suave?
The two men sat on opposite sides of the table from each other.
He's obviously in one of his elegant moods. There's no need to be flattered. It merely signifies that he's measuring you up as a potential romantic fling.
Really? Well, I find that quite interesting, actually. As you know, I happen to like a man who knows what he wants.
In just those few words, Garin knew that Rue and the woman had been lovers at one time. She casually flirted with him not to catch his eye, but to catch Rue's. Garin pocketed that little bit of trivia and spread a napkin on his lap.
Did you have a safe trip?
Yes, thank you.
We have wine. May I pour you a glass?
Please.
Garin sipped the wine when she gave it to him. It was a robust red, but it wasn't expensive. That told him Rue had ordered the wine.
I'd like to know what's going on.
Jennifer believes she's found the painting.
After you've been looking for it all these years?
Rue ignored the slight and swirled his wine.
Luck has as much to do with a find as diligence. Surely Rue taught you that while you were with him.
So you were luckier than the old man?
I wondered if you were going to be more hindrance than help. I guess you've answered that question.
No. When the chips are down and your back is to the wall, there's only one person you'll ever send for, and you know it.
Even as Garin said that, though, he knew Rue was incapable of admitting it. The old man had never been one to give praise willingly. Then a realization hit Garin.
This is about Anya, isn't it? You're upset that she went out with me.
She didn't go out with you. You took advantage of her.
I was the perfect gentleman.
You forced the situation.
The situation, yes, but not her. No one can force Anya Cree to do anything. I knew that before I even arranged the evening.
Bastard.
Stop it. I know there's some bad blood between the two of you, but knock it off.
Idly, Garin wondered what she'd think if she'd known that bad blood had been brewing for hundreds of years.
The bottom line is that you called, Rue, and you came, Garin, and that the painting of the Nephilim, for whatever reason you want it, might be here.
Might be? You don't know?
Not yet.
Then I've wasted my time.
Not yet.
There's every likelihood that the painting is here. Jennifer has worked with me regarding this matter before.
Until he ditched me 13 years ago.
Jennifer stared daggers at Rue. Garin had to smile at the woman's thinly veiled rancor.
She's not exactly part of your fan club, is she, old man?
I took the liberty of ordering for you.
Watching carefully, Garin studied the plates as the servers burdened the tables with them. The dishes were all French, which wasn't Garin's favorite, but his favorites among that fare were clearly represented. Rue had forgotten nothing.
That's fine, thank you.
He turned his attention to the food. One of Rue's first lessons to him had been to eat when he had food before him. They'd lived like wolves much of the time in those long-ago days. Often they'd never known where their next meal was coming from.
Where is the painting?
With a collector, here in the city. There was an auction earlier today. We couldn't make it in time.
Pity. I might have been able to finish my date.
Rue bristled, stabbing at his food with unnecessary force.
As it was, I believe she was quite upset.
She returned to Brooklyn. Don't make her out to be heartbroken.
So, Jennifer, how did you find the painting?
For the last 13 years, I've been searching for the painting.
Because Rue told you about it?
Partly. And partly because it was the only chance I thought I'd ever have of meeting Rue again.
The old man must have left you with quite an impression.
This isn't about then. It's not even about the future. It doesn't concern Rue at all. This is about the painting.
How did you find it?
This isn't a trap. I followed up on the painter's family.
They didn't have the painting. We talked with them.
Recently? Because they certainly didn't mention it.
Quite some time ago, actually. It doesn't matter.
Garin reflected that that was certainly true. All the people they'd asked had died generations ago.
They didn't know what they had. Artists back in those days lived by the grace of a patron, not from selling their work.
Condensed version, please.
Rue told me the two of you had talked to the family once, but you pursued the paternal family. As it turns out, the painter, Josef Choklis, was an illegitimate child.
Even after all the years that had passed, Garin still felt the physical impact of that description. He felt Rue's eyes on him and didn't dare look at the old man. Garin would never completely forget his upbringing.
Josef took the name of his mother's husband, but he was always closer to his mother and her people.
All right, he was a mama's boy. What of it?
Josef's family has been trying to track down the painting. They've heard the legend.
What legend?
That Josef hid most of the gold he earned from patrons, and the painting reveals the hiding place.
Do you know how little those artists were paid? I'm telling you now that whatever amount they've imagined, it's either not real or far less than what they believe.
There's also conjecture that Choklis stole an immense fortune from one of his benefactors.
Garin rolled his eyes and knew from the angry look on Jennifer's face that he'd offended her.
I don't believe in those old stories for a minute.
Sure you don't.
Finding the painting became a family project for Josef's cousins on his mother's side of the family because of their beliefs, not mine. Over the intervening 500 years, they've been looking for the painting as well. You're familiar with Cosimo de' Medici?
Yes.
Some, those few that knew of the painting's existence, also knew of Cosimo's interest in it.
Looking for a lost fortune isn't something Cosimo de' Medici would have done.
From the corner of his eye, Garin watched Rue for a reaction. The old man blithely ate and seemed content to listen.
No, he was interested in the painting's ability to bring about the end of the world.
Garin paused. Now that would be something to catch Rue's interest. During their years together, Rue had hunted such objects and talismans of power. At first, Garin hadn't believed in any of those things, but he had soon realized that those things, like the sword Anya carried and whatever power had kept him ageless for 500 years, existed.
Of course, I don't believe in any of that.
Of course.
Garin glanced at Rue, but the old man wouldn't meet his eyes.
Then what do you believe in?
The painting has a lot of history. Whatever secret it's been hiding has been there for hundreds of years. People are willing to kill to get it.
What people?
Salome. She's chasing the painting as well.
Salome. Now there's as pretty a viper as you'd ever want to meet. I see now why you called me. I'm surprised she's still alive. Rue, you must be getting soft if you let her live.
You're still alive.
I've had a long time to learn how to survive. And I never betrayed you the way that woman did.
No, you didn't.
Then we kill her this time?
If circumstances permit.
This woman is going to be trouble. We should get rid of her.
This is stupid. No more talk of killing people. Understood?
Of course. How crass of us.
You're absolutely right.
Garin smiled easily at Jennifer as he returned to his food. If he got the chance to kill Salome, he intended to drive a stake through her heart to make certain she stayed dead. Drake took Salome into the estate shortly after darkness consumed the tree-lined grounds. She was dressed all in black, had her hair pulled back, and wore a Beretta 93R at her hip. She carried a cut-down shotgun tucked in a scabbard that ran down her back. Drake studied the BlackBerry in his hand.
All right. Byron and his lads have taken out the security system. We're good to go.
Cosmetic blackface disguised his features. Salome wore the paint as well. She hated it because it was so hard to clean off, and it was hard on her skin. Her beauty meant a lot to her. Her features were the most potent weapon in her arsenal. Drake carried a silenced H&K MP5 in both gloved hands as he broke into a trot. Salome knew weapons because she often dealt with them. No product translated into cash as readily in so many countries as weapons. The same couldn't be said of drugs. She knew because she'd dealt in those too. As they neared the security gatehouse, a black-clad warrior stepped from within. He gave Drake a thumbs up. Salome glanced briefly through the darkened window and saw the men slumped over inside. Blood dripped down the inside of the bulletproof glass and offered mute testimony that the men inside hadn't gone down easily. Their deaths didn't bother Salome. She was prepared to kill everyone inside the large house within the security walls. Salome walked behind the man, two steps back and one step to the right, to give herself a proper field of fire.
Do you really think this painting has magical properties, love?
It's supposed to.
According to this old duffer you've talked about, Rue?
Yes.
Although Drake didn't reply, she knew he was somewhat disappointed in her. When they'd first met, while he'd been providing security for a man who'd owned one of the artifacts she'd been after, they'd been enemies, but only professionally. As Drake had insisted, he hadn't known her well enough to dislike her. That night, she'd killed two of his best men. One of them had been a good friend. He'd almost been unable to forgive her for that, but he had. When it came to the bottom line, they were both professionals. He just didn't like the fact that she believed in magic. It would be better, Salome thought, as she often did, if she could show him the things she'd seen. The problem was, of course, that she couldn't. She'd only seen those things while she'd been with Rue. Talking about those times always left Drake in a foul mood. The one drawback she'd found in him was that he was insanely jealous. Other than that, he was perfect. He was a talented and generous lover, and he was a flawless killing machine when he was in action. She followed him through the darkness that filled the estate's inner courtyard. Her hands firmly gripped the pistol. Ilse Danziger slept with her mouth open. She was in her late 40s. Strands of her henna-colored hair lay across her slack face. She'd had plastic surgery done to preserve her looks. Without makeup, the scars under her chin were just barely visible. She lay cuddled in the arms of a man who was not her husband. Salome had seen a picture of Edward Danziger. The shipping magnate was in his early 70s, a quiet and distinguished man from his appearance. He was also rich enough and selfish enough to overlook a wayward wife nearly half his age while he was out of town. The bedroom looked as though it had been transported from a child's book of fantasy stories. The huge four-poster bed was the centerpiece. One wall contained electronic entertainment equipment. The blue glow of the television washed over the woman and her lover. Drake looked at Salome. Salome held the Beretta in one hand while she reached out to tap Ilse on the cheek with the other. The woman stirred but didn't wake. Salome patted her more firmly. This time, the woman's eyes fluttered open. Then they locked open. Salome clapped a gloved hand over the woman's mouth.
No, no screaming. We're going to handle this like civilized adults.
The man shifted. Salome knew he was awake from his posture beneath the silk sheets. He sprang up and tried to grab Salome's wrist.
Who are you? Get out of here!
Obviously, he didn't see the pistol in her fist. Without hesitation, Salome pointed the Beretta at the man's face and squeezed the trigger. The woman opened her mouth to scream. Salome shoved the Beretta's suppressor between the woman's lips.
Well, perhaps this will be a little less than civilized.
Is that man your father, Miss Creed?
Anya knew, without turning around, that the homeless man was back. He'd been watching her for almost 2 hours. Frankly, she was surprised it had taken this long for the museum's assistant curator to notice the old man standing there.
No.
Anya didn't look up from the exhibit she was working on. The museum had recently received acquisitions from a benefactor who had died, and she'd been hired to catalog and certify the artifacts. Since most museums existed more or less by the sufferance of their patrons, especially so in the case of a small museum like this one, She knew they would have rather continued the man's yearly donations than accept his collection after his death. After all, the collection acquisition only came in once. The pieces were good, but by no means spectacular. They were worth putting on display. Most visitors to the museum wouldn't recognize their significance, though.
Oh, he's not your father.
No.
Evan Peebly, the assistant curator, frowned in confusion. He was in his early 20s and looked as though he'd just graduated university. His appearance was deceiving, though. Black hair hung long and lank, as if he'd only just returned from an excursion in the Gobi Desert or someplace, and he maintained a 5 o'clock shadow through the use of a beard trimmer set to leave only stubble behind. His khakis held straight lines, and his shirt sleeve cuffs, rolled to mid-forearm, looked crisp and carefully measured. Peebly tapped his upper lip with a forefinger and gazed at the man.
I was just wondering...
Because he's been there for the last hour and a half.
I didn't know he'd been here that long.
He has.
Well, do you think he means the museum any harm?
Anya straightened, put both hands on her hips, and stretched. Vertebrae in her spine popped, and she felt better almost immediately. She looked at the assistant curator.
I think if he'd meant any harm, it would have happened by now.
Perhaps I should alert the security guard.
Anya smiled at that. The security guard was Oswald Carson, a retired 70-year-old NYPD policeman who had never drawn his weapon while on the job. The guard looked like a rake dressed in a security uniform.
He knows. He's watching.
Carson stood near the bronze exhibit beside a Spartan warrior holding a spear and shield.
Well, maybe he could do something more than watch.
Like what?
He could chase that man off.
Why?
Well, because he's creepy looking, that's why.
Being creepy looking isn't against the law.
It's obvious that he's stalking you.
Is it?
Anya glanced over her shoulder to make sure that the old man was the same one from Tito's last night. The truth was that she didn't know. This one wore nondescript clothing. Furthermore, the wild look in his eyes could be seen in a lot of people these days. She supposed, given the right circumstances, that she might even see it in hers.
Well, I think you should take his presence here a little more seriously.
I am. I took his picture and sent it in to a detective friend of mine. He's trying to find out who he is and where he belongs.
When she turned around with the camera she was using to capture images of the artifacts, Anya had fully expected the old man to cut and run. Instead, he'd stood his ground as if he was posing for a photo op. Anya hoped Bart could at least identify who he was and where he belonged. Then, as she knew it would, Peebly's mind got around to recognizing the fact that if Anya was in danger, so was he, because he was standing so close.
It looks like you're doing well here.
Don't you want to go over everything?
Oh, not today. Just finish up quickly. We're going to lock up the museum promptly at 7. What you don't finish tonight, you'll have to come back and finish tomorrow.
Anya didn't intend to let that happen. The authentication job didn't pay well enough to spend 2 days on it. Besides that, she still had the King Wenceslas piece she wanted to put together for Chasing History's Monsters. Evan hustled away, glancing once or twice over his shoulder. Anya glanced back toward the old man. He was still there. In fact, he was walking right up to her.
May I help you?
Anya blinked at him. Up close, she realized that he was taller than she'd believed. For a fleeting moment, she wondered if she should run. Then she decided that if she thought she had to run from a skinny old man, she was really losing it and needed to just stay home. He smiled, revealing crooked teeth.
I don't mean to impose. It's just that I thought you might use a hand. I heard that young fella say you had to be out of here by closing time, and it's 1:45 now.
Anya glanced at the time on her phone lying nearby and was surprised to find that it was 6:45. There was no question that she needed help. She'd counted on Peebly's presence to help get everything finished on time.
I've got steady hands, if that's what you're worried about. I'm not an alcoholic. I just get a little mixed up from time to time.
The man held out his hands. They were steady as rocks. They were also scarred. His fingers were twisted and his knuckles were misshapen. They looked arthritic at first glance, but he still possessed supple movement.
I won't drop anything.
Okay.
Anya handed an urn to the man.
Just hold that there so I can take pictures of it.
Of course.
He smiled as if pleased to be of use. Anya settled behind her camera lens and took pictures. She took several of the old man as well, but she didn't think she succeeded in taking them without his knowledge.
What's your name?
I've had several names. Do you have a favorite?
For me?
For me. Your name is Anya.
Even though he'd called her by name the night before, it was still weird to hear him do it again, and she wondered how he knew her.
I don't have a favorite name.
Of course you do. You love stories of the past. You've heard many names. Surely you have a favorite among them.
Not really.
But she found herself thinking of Charlemagne instead of Wenceslas. The king of the Franks had been a true warrior and recognized as one of the nine worthies, one of the nine historical figures that were thought most chivalrous.
You can just call me Charlie. I haven't been called Charlie in a long time.
Anya looked at him, nonplussed. She didn't give in to the temptation to believe that the man had read her mind. That was impossible. She tried not to think about her equally impossible sword just then. They worked peacefully for a while. Charlie would hold the piece, she would photograph it. Truthfully, it was far more soothing than working with Evan. Anya glanced at her phone, surprised to find it was 7:05. She transferred the call to the clip-on earpiece she wore so she could keep her hands free. Together, she and Charlie had almost completed the pictures she needed to take. With them in hand, she'd be able to finish the authentication at home and send the museum a bill.
Hi, Bart.
No, Charlie.
Anya pointed to her ear, hoping the old man would realize she was talking to someone over the phone. Charlie smiled and nodded agreeably. He leaned to that ear.
Hello?
Hello. Who's the guy you're with?
I'm talking on the phone, Charlie.
Oh, sorry. All this new technology is hard to comprehend.
Is that him? Is that the old man?
I'm here with Charlie.
Great.
He's friendly.
During the past few minutes, Anya had been surprised to find herself warming up to the old man.
He says Charlie is his name?
Yes. Unless you have something different?
No, I ran him through the photo database of missing people and came up with nothing.
Maybe it hasn't been reported yet.
I thought of that all by myself. I went through missing persons reports. Scary thinking about how many of them disappear every year.
Did you find anything?
No. So how are things going there?
Fine. I've got help working through the authentication.
He's working with you?
Yes.
No end of the world speeches?
Not yet.
Need me to come by?
Thanks for the offer, but no. Not if you're busy. I think I can handle this.
Okay. Look, I've got to go. A triple homicide just got called in. But I've got my phone. If you need anything, call.
I will.
And don't trust this guy.
I won't.
Anya broke the connection and pocketed the earpiece in her jeans. Charlie stood nearby and smiled pleasantly to himself.
It seems the curator is in a hurry to go.
He nodded toward the front of the museum. Peebly stood by the main doors.
Ladies and gentlemen, the museum is now closing. Please make your way to the exits. The museum is closing. Thank you for visiting. Please come back again.
Anya watched. Within minutes, the museum patrons had filed through the door. It hadn't taken long because there weren't many of them. Determined to beat the clock, Anya grabbed the files and papers she'd been working with and shoved them into her backpack. She was ready in seconds. Without a word, Charlie fell in step behind her.
What are you going to do?
I thought maybe I could take you to dinner.
Anya pulled at her backpack straps. There was no reason to go with him. In fact, there was every reason not to go with him. For the first time, Anya realized the darkness outside wasn't just from the lateness of the hour. The smell of rain blew in through the door that Peebly was pointedly holding open.
Miss Creed, if you please.
Dinner?
Yes. There's a nice soup kitchen not far from here. They might still be serving.
Anya felt terrible. If Charlie had stayed at the museum past serving time, he might be going to bed hungry. Bart's advice not to trust him echoed in her head. Thoughts of serial killers bounced around in there, too. But there was something about the old man, except for the fact that he seemed a little spotty when it came to reality, that drew her in. While she'd worked with him, she'd seen his gentleness and innocence, as well as his quiet strength. Anya reminded herself she was going to be in a public place. And he didn't exactly look like a kung fu master.
All right.
Anya headed out into the rain. Peebly didn't even offer to let them stay within the doorway until the rain slackened. Anya stood at the curbside and searched for a taxi. There was never one around when it was raining.
Oh!
Anya automatically reached behind her and felt for the sword in the otherwhere.
I didn't mean to startle you.
Charlie stood unconcernedly and worked with a battered umbrella he had pulled from under the ratty trench coat he wore.
I thought maybe you'd like to be out of the rain.
The umbrella had opened to gigantic proportions. The black fabric was gray from age and hard use. Small slits allowed the rain to drip through in places, but it blunted the downpour.
There. That's better.
Charlie grinned, and for a moment, Anya could see the young man he had once been. Anya glanced down the darkened street. The possibility of being picked up by a taxi didn't look good.
I think we're going to have to walk.
Nonsense. We're on a quest to save the world. Just as the forces of darkness align themselves against us, those of light will favor us.
Maybe we'd better get started.
Maybe you should have a little faith on your creed. You've been given a great responsibility in this world. You've also been given a bit of luck.
Charlie nodded down the street. Anya looked. Incredibly, the headlights of a taxi bored through the darkness. Even more incredibly, despite the number of pedestrians trying frantically to wave the taxi down, it pulled to the curb in front of Anya. Charlie took a step forward and opened the door.
See? Just have a little faith.
Anya slid inside and made room for Charlie. She stared at the old man as he closed the umbrella, raked his hair from his face, and slid inside.
But you still have to make your own luck. Without that, the world'll end for certain.
Seated in the darkened cargo area of the panel van he'd rented for the night's excursion, Garin studied Rue. He and Jennifer sat on the other side of the van. Both of them wore black clothing. Members of the security team Garin had hired bookended them. That hadn't happened by chance. Garin didn't trust Rue, ever. Rue had remained strangely quiet throughout the meal and on the ride back to the hotel, where he'd rented rooms for all three of them. There were only two rooms. As it turned out, Jennifer was rooming with Rue.
Sir?
Garin turned his attention to the earpiece he wore.
Yes?
We're coming up on the estate now.
Good.
Garin reached up and flipped down a video monitor from the vehicle's roof. The cargo area only had windows in the back door. Both of those had been blacked out. Instantly, an image filled the screen. The monitor showed the road leading up to the estate. A soft glow of light from a guardhouse could be seen. Rue rolled his eyes. Jennifer looked at him.
The old man doesn't much care for technology.
Garin touched the screen and shifted through the different perspectives available to him. The security team had outfitted the van with a satellite relay that allowed Garin to stream video coming in from the camera mounted on the front of the van. Select members of the group also wore more cameras.
A child and his toys.
I found it most helpful. Besides, the last time I was at your estate, you seemed to have the latest security measures.
It only serves to keep the idiots out.
Sir, are you ready for us to approach the outpost?
Garin surveyed the front of the estate. Nothing moved there.
Go.
Garin touched the screen again and shifted through the views until he'd selected the camera mounted on the man in the approach team. In the camera's view, two men took advantage of the brush on the side of the guardhouse as they closed on their objective. The camera bounced slightly as it followed.
Do you want to tell me how you were going to break into this place if I hadn't decided to lend a hand?
I have resources.
Rue watched the screen. Garin rolled his eyes. A moment later, the two men entered the guardhouse. So far, so good, Garin thought. Then the whole operation went to hell.
Sir, we have a problem. Somebody killed these guys.
The cameraman stepped forward. The image carried back showed corpses lying where the bullets had left them sprawled.
Damn it. Salome beat us here.
Garin held a sound-suppressed pistol in his gloved right hand. He focused his attention on the monitor as the van hurtled toward the house.
Invading the premises at this point isn't the smartest thing we could do. If Salome got here before us...
She did. We waited too long.
I had to take some time to get my team in place.
Then we'd be better off leaving.
She might still be here.
And the police might be on their way. I didn't come here to get arrested for murder.
That would be the least of our worries if Salome gets our hands on that painting.
Maybe if we knew what was at stake, we'd all feel better about the risk we're taking.
Rue ignored Jennifer. The view of the main house grew bigger as the van sped across the landscaped grounds. A few lights glowed softly inside the structure. Two of Garin's teams closed on the back door and left the front entrance to the van crew. Snipers positioned on the security walls kept watch over the site.
I think Salome is already gone.
If she was, then the police would be here.
What makes you so certain?
She'd do that to make the situation even more insufferable, as a final insult.
Or she might set up a trap.
Garin scanned the front of the house less than 50 yards away. Shadows cloaked the facade.
Get us out of here!
The safe was located behind the entertainment center. Ilsa Danziger had given up the location quickly after she'd seen her lover killed. Salome tripped the electronic locks with the same remote control that operated the television, surround sound, DVD player, and other entertainment devices. Evidently, the woman's husband liked having everything linked to the same controller. After Salome keyed in the special code, the entertainment center slid away to reveal a safe built into the wall. The safe was the size of a regular door. Another key code spun the tumblers inside the lock. When she glanced at Drake, Salome saw the man was grinning in anticipation.
Excited?
Positively brimming. A man builds a safe like that, he's not casual about what he puts in there. I expect to find a few other things to pick up besides the painting you're after.
Ilsa Danziger sat at the foot of the bed. Disposable cuffs bound her wrists and ankles. She rocked on her knees, tears pouring down her face, unable to keep still.
Please don't kill me. Please.
The temptation to put a bullet through the woman's head was almost more than Salome could bear. But until she had her hands on the painting of the Nephilim, she wasn't going to lose her only avenue of information. Drake nodded at one of the men in the room. He stepped forward and started to pull on the door.
Wait.
Drake looked at the terrified woman. When he aimed his pistol at her, he depressed the trigger just enough to bring the targeting laser to life. The ruby beam was steady between the woman's eyes. The reflection turned her tears glowing scarlet.
Are there any booby traps on the safe?
No.
Because if there are, if something happens to my man or if the police suddenly decide to arrive, I'm going to kill you.
There aren't, I swear.
The woman closed her eyes and ducked her head so she couldn't look at him. Drake turned back to the door and nodded to the man at the door. The man went inside and found a light switch. Illumination filled the safe. Salome entered. It almost looked like a bank vault. Stacks of currency from a handful of countries sat on a shelf in neat bundles. Drake stripped a pillowcase from the bed and swept the cash into it.
Nothing wrong walking away with a little extra.
Salome barely noticed. Her eyes locked onto the painting that sat inside a protective case. She took a small penlight from one of the many pockets in her Kevlar vest. She shone the beam directly on the painting. The brooding figure of the angel glowed. Carefully, Salome took a reagent from her pocket, applied it to a handkerchief, and knelt to swab it on a corner of the painting. She waited patiently. For a moment, nothing happened, and her hope remained intact. Then, slowly, paint lifted from the canvas.
Damn it!
She took the reagent from her pocket and upended it across the painting. Applied in greater volume, the paint bubbled from the canvas in strips.
What's wrong?
It's fake! This isn't the original painting!
You're sure?
Of course I'm sure. It's a very good copy, but it's forged!
You said it was a copy.
It is!
Not merely guesswork on the part of the forger.
You think the forger painted this from the original painting?
You said yourself that no one had seen this painting in years.
Yes.
Then how did you know what it was supposed to look like?
From reports of people who've seen it.
Salome looked at the dripping mess of the painting oozing onto the floor.
Whoever forged this knew what he or she was doing, love. Stands to reason that maybe the artist was working from good source material. Like, for instance, the original painting.
Find the painter, find the original.
Salome turned away from the false painting. She sealed away her frustration and anger. All of this could still be sorted out. The radio receiver in her ear buzzed. She thumbed it on and watched Drake reach up for his receiver at the same time.
Yes.
We have visitors.
Who are they?
We haven't identified him yet.
Where are they?
Front of the house.
Salome crossed to the bedroom's window. One of Drake's men shut off the light inside the safe. She peered around the edge of the window at the estate grounds. A van sped up the road to the main house. They would arrive in seconds. She felt certain she knew who was inside. Rue had always been driven to succeed.
They're also ground forces. We've identified two separate units in addition to the van. They've placed snipers on the walls.
We have the rocket team.
For a split second, Salome thought about Rue and the years they'd spent together. The old man had taught her a lot, but he hadn't taught her everything she wanted to know. In the end, she'd stolen part of his knowledge, taken a journal that talked about many wondrous things that she wanted to find. So far, she'd found none of them. Twice before, she had found items mentioned in that book, and twice before, Rue had managed to strip them from her hands before she could realize her prize. She knew what she had to do.
Kill them!
Do it!
Immediately, a rocket shot from the second-story window. The rocket struck the van's left front bumper and knocked it aside like a child's toy. Flames engulfed the van at once. So long, Rue, Salome thought, with just a twinge of sadness.
Reload.
You have the most beautiful eyes.
The comment startled Anya as she sat across the small table from the old man. She and Charlie occupied one of the back tables at Luigi's, a small Italian restaurant that offered an evening buffet. Even Luigi, who prized Anya's patronage because she was, in his view at least, a television star, barely admitted Charlie to his establishment.
I've never seen eyes quite like yours. They're like a cat's, but they have so much more promise, and maybe threat.
Thank you, I think. But they'll be closing the kitchen before long. You should eat.
I am eating. I was merely letting my stomach settle a little. The food here is very filling.
Anya knew that. It was why she'd brought him there. From the look of him, he hadn't had a decent meal in a long time. Charlie picked up his fork and resumed his attack on the huge slab of lasagna in front of him.
You don't find this kind of thing in the soup kitchens.
I suppose not.
It's true. The food there is very wholesome. It's just that all too often there isn't enough of it, or it isn't prepared as well.
Look, I can give you a little money, if you think that will help.
Dear lady, I haven't asked you for tribute, have I?
No.
Anya felt guilt for even offering. The reaction was foolish, but there was an air of pride about the homeless man that won her over.
But it's also foolish to turn down generosity just because of pride when you're in dire straits. Do you have money you could spare?
Anya reached into her pocket and brought out two twenties. She'd use her debit card to settle the tab at Luigi's. Charlie crumpled the bills into his palm, curled his fingers into a tight fist, turned his hand over, then opened it so the palm faced up. There was no sign of the money. A moment of stunned fascination passed. Anya stared at Charlie's empty hand. It was a child's trick, a practiced maneuver of simple deception, except she hadn't seen a single hint of misdirection.
Surprised?
How did you do that?
Magic.
You're a magician?
Some have called me that. I've never considered myself a magician.
Have you been an entertainer?
For many years. I've been throughout Europe, trod stages, and conducted performances 'neath leafy boughs.
What was your act?
Why, magic, of course. That's one thing that attracts everyone's attention.
But I thought you didn't consider yourself a magician.
Anya handed her debit card to the server who'd presented the bill.
I didn't. I don't now. I'm a storyteller. I tell most wondrous stories, but I find that if you don't keep an audience's attention, they'll never stay with you to the end of the story. It's the same thing Hollywood does with all these special effects they cram into movies these days.
You watch movies?
Of course. Puerile entertainment at best, but Shakespeare entertained the common masses with the same aplomb.
Shakespeare and special effects?
They weren't unknown to each other. Shakespeare took advantage of stage presentation to get his tales told. He did have a limited landscape in which to perform, after all.
What kind of magic did you do?
All kinds. I once made a camel appear in downtown Cairo to amuse a handful of children. That little maneuver brought about far more attention than I'd hoped for.
Besides magic, what other jobs have you held?
In spite of her fascination, Anya wanted to get enough information to help Bart find out where the old man belonged when he wasn't out wandering the streets.
Oh, I've been a soothsayer now and again for different kings and queens.
Anya hoped the man's delusions were only a matter of his body chemistry. Maybe he'd simply been off of his meds for too long. Charlie looked at Anya and smiled wistfully.
I find that people really don't change. No matter where you go, once they discover that you can foretell events, they all want to know what's going to happen to them. They never want to know what's going to happen to the world or how they might help the global community.
Not me.
Not you. That's because you already know you've got a great destiny before you.
How would I know that?
Because you have Joan's sword.
Surprised, Anya glanced around to see if anyone had overheard. She immediately wondered if she was being set up by an enemy of Rue's whom she hadn't yet met, or if Garin had sent someone to try to get the sword from her. Satisfied that no one had, she turned her attention back to Charlie. Anya also felt a lot more paranoid than she had previously.
I don't have a sword.
Oh, yes, you do. It belonged to Joan of Arc.
Charlie stabbed another piece of lasagna and popped it into his mouth. Anya had the sudden sensation of being watched. She tried to dismiss the impressions and told herself she was imagining things. Neither of the feelings went away.
Who told you I had a sword like that?
I'm afraid I can't tell you that. That isn't part of this tale.
What is this tale?
Why, the one where you save the world, of course. Why else would I be here?
How am I supposed to save the world?
By stopping the king, of course.
What king?
One of the sleeping kings.
The mythology of the sleeping kings is that they're supposed to save the world.
Well, these things sometimes go astray. That's why heroes like you were mixed into the weave, to keep everything on track. That's what you're going to have to do this time. I don't mean to be indelicate, but do you happen to know where the men's room is?
Anya pointed the way to the sign and watched him slide his chair back and walk away. As soon as Charlie disappeared, Anya pulled out a notepad and pen to make notes about their conversation. One of Luigi's servers went to the new arrivals.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. We are closing for the evening.
Get out of my way!
The sharp tone drew Anya's attention immediately. When she looked up, she saw three men in dark street clothes gazing directly at her. The server, one of Luigi's young cousins or nephews, put a hand in the center of the man's chest to halt his forward movement.
I told you where...
The server sailed backward into a bus cart and landed in a crumpled heap on the floor. The man's eyes focused on Anya.
Miss Creed, if you come with me, you won't be hurt. My master has asked that you be taken without harm.
In that moment, Anya caught a flash of a scimitar on the chain at the man's throat.
No, it doesn't matter to me.
He reached under his jacket. The van jerked violently to the side, then flipped and rolled. Unfettered by a seatbelt, Garin slammed against the vehicle's sides with bruising force. Without warning, the van struck something and went sideways. Then the vehicle stopped flipping, skidded a few more feet, and smashed against something solid. They'd smashed into the trees. Garin saw them through the rents in the roof. A branch stabbed into the cargo area. He felt to find his earpiece and mic still attached and functioning.
Take out the rocket launcher.
Garin reached into one of his pockets and pulled out a penlight. Before he could turn it on, another light came on with dazzling brightness. Incredibly, Rue stood there looking for all the world as if he were out for a Sunday walk. Even standing in the van amid the tangled sprawl of the mercenaries, he looked grim and capable.
Get them out of here. If you don't, you're going to get them all killed.
Garin didn't bother with a response as he checked on the two men in the back. They were semi-conscious at best. He turned his attention to the doors. The van had come to a stop on its side. The doors were jammed. Garin pushed against them, but they wouldn't open. He braced himself. Garin grabbed for one semi-conscious man and heaved him through the open door. Then he reached for another. In the next second, Rue was there with him, helping him get the men out. Two were dead. One's neck lolled at a sickening angle, and the other had a chest full of metal shards from the side of the van that had caught the rocket round blast. Rue helped Jennifer through the door. She was dazed as well, and had a large cut over her right eye. Rue looked back at Garin.
Go!
Garin passed his light around the cargo van's interior and found the pistol he'd dropped, as well as an H&K MP5. By the time he'd grabbed the firearms and turned around, Rue was through the door. The surviving mercenaries began to recover and took up positions among the trees. Then a spark leapt from one of the second-story windows again.
Garin!
Consciousness returned to Garin in a rush, as if he'd been deep underwater and suddenly surfaced. A face, blurred and indistinct, hung above him. He clenched a big fist and threw a punch. Rue slapped the blow away as if it were a bothersome insect. Garin thought he must really be out of it if Rue could block him so easily.
Can you get up?
Yes!
Garin tried to get to his feet, but his coordination was shot. He kept expecting another rocket to strike them. With the twisted wreckage of the van burning nearby, he knew the darkness held no safety for them. Rue stepped forward, and Garin felt himself being wrenched to his feet. Fiery agony wrapped his midsection, and he wondered if he'd broken his ribs.
Evidently, Salome has better killers than you do.
If all you're going to do is criticize, I'll save myself. And I bought into your troubles. This is no trouble of mine.
You're right. I apologize.
Rue's apology stunned Garin enough that he forgot about his pain and the bullets that tore through the trees around them. Rue put Garin up against a tree and looked at him with deadly intensity.
If possible, you need to regroup your men. We can't let Salome escape with that painting.
Garin put a hand to the side of his face and adjusted his earpiece.
What do you hear?
Two of ours are dead. Three are out of action. The snipers are still in position. Salome and her people know they're out there, though. The snipers finally took out the men with the rocket launcher.
That's good. Let's just hope no one else picks up the damnable thing. True warriors fight with naked steel and close enough to see their opponents' faces. This is a sacrilege to honor.
Honor gets you killed on the battlefield. It's better to have superiority. That way, if the other side can see your show of force, maybe no one has to die.
Generals have thought that for centuries. It's not any more true now than it ever was.
Is now really the time for this argument?
Can you stand?
Yes!
Rue released him and stepped back. Garin stood unsteadily, but he stood. A shadow stepped out of the darkness and closed on Rue. Reflexively, Garin drew his pistol.
No!
Rue knocked the pistol aside as Garin fired. It was Jennifer. She stared at him in shock.
Oh, sorry. Didn't know it was you.
Next time, look!
The muzzle flash of your pistol!
Alerted the shooter still inside the house.
We never went up against people like this when we were together.
That's one of the reasons I didn't stay. The world keeps getting more dangerous. I do apologize for the way I left.
It was a night for wonders, Garin decided. They still lived in spite of everything, and he was witnessing a side of Rue that he didn't think he'd ever seen.
Don't you think it's a little late for an apology?
That's up to you.
Late or not, this is an entirely inappropriate place. Maybe you could shelve the reunion until after we get out of here alive and are one step ahead of the police.
Garin turned his attention back to his men via his comlink.
Okay, I'm going to make a run for the house as a decoy. I want the snipers to pick them off when they reveal their positions. Are we ready?
The snipers are ready. Sir, you don't have to do this. One of the other men...
None of the other men on this side of the main house is in any shape to draw fire. Let's do this.
Yes, sir.
Garin ignored the searing pain in his left side. He held the MP5 in both hands. Rue's hand fell on his shoulder.
Be careful.
Rue squeezed his shoulder and took his hand away. Garin turned his attention to the 70-plus yards that separated him from the next copse of trees. Three snipers had the front of the main house in their field of fire.
No!
Garin broke cover and sprinted for the trees.
No, it doesn't matter to me.
Before the man's pistol had time to clear the holster, Anya slung her backpack over her left shoulder and reached for the sword with her right. She had her fingers curled around the hilt when she realized that Luigi and the restaurant staff would see it.
Miss Creed.
The man pointed his weapon at her. Unable to go on the offensive, Anya turned and ran.
Get her!
Anya bolted toward the hallway that led to the back door, grabbing the partition wall and making a sharp turn. Bullets hammered the length of the partition wall. Anya aimed for the panic bar that sealed the door. She passed through and turned right immediately, away from the door as it opened. Stale, hot air washed over her face as she stepped into the alley. Piles of trash lined the narrow thoroughfare. Anya was tempted to hide, but staying close enough to be found was a bad idea. She stretched out her stride and concentrated on eating up the distance. Despite the adrenaline filling her system and the way she pushed herself, her breathing remained under control. She wanted to reach for the sword, but she held off that impulse. This was her city, her turf. No way was she going to let them catch her here. Anya caught sight of the brightness behind her as the restaurant's back door opened. She ran across the street. A cab missed her by inches and slammed into a delivery van, which braked to an immediate halt. Anya ran behind the taxi and cut in front of the stalled oncoming traffic. She caught sight of a man in her peripheral vision at the same time she spotted a Mini Cooper bolting around the two cars ahead of it. She checked the distance and speed and guessed that she had just enough time before the small car sped through. The man behind her threw himself in a dive. He managed to wrap a hand around her ankle, but he was on the ground when he did it. The Mini Cooper driver was concentrating on Anya. He didn't even see the man on the street.
Good job.
The Mini Cooper smashed over him. His fingers peeled away from Anya's ankle. She tripped and went down, then forced herself up on one elbow. The heat from the Mini Cooper's engine blew over her. Anya pushed herself to her feet and ran for the nearest alley, pounding down through it and hanging a sharp right. Half a block down, she bolted across another street and threaded a second alley, weaving her way through the neighborhood. Once she was certain she'd outdistanced the men chasing her, Anya finally slowed her pace to a walk. When she looked around, she got her bearings and aimed for a second-story cybercafe above a Vietnamese bodega. It operated 24 hours and was filled by hardcore gamers, crackers, and scammers. After checking and still not seeing any sign of her pursuers, Anya entered the small stairwell and went up to the cybercafe.
Hey, Anya.
Graham, the guy behind the counter, smiled. He was in his early 30s, short and dark-haired, with round-lensed glasses and an innocent face. Tattoos featuring koi and dragons covered every square inch of his arms.
Hey, Graham. Can I get a booth?
Always.
Do you have a window booth open?
Yep. You want that one?
Please.
You got it. Anything else?
Hot chocolate?
Sure, I'll bring it out to you when it's ready.
Anya nodded her thanks. She turned and started to head for the booth.
Hey, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You look a little discombobulated.
Anya smiled at him. It had always amazed her how many friends she'd made around the neighborhood.
Mugger.
You okay?
I'm fine.
You sure?
Absolutely. I outran him.
I believe it. I'll bring that hot chocolate.
Anya settled at her booth, satisfied that it had a good view of the street, but that she wasn't necessarily on display. She pulled her computer out and hooked into Graham's system. While waiting, she skimmed the web and watched the street. Saladin's men didn't give up easily. As she watched, they cycled through the neighborhood in two-man groups, obviously walking a search pattern. She recognized one of them from Luigi's, and that made her wonder what had happened at the restaurant after she left. She opened her backpack and took out her digital camera. A nearby streetlight illuminated the two men as they strolled down the sidewalk. There was enough light to shoot by, and Anya managed a half a dozen frames before they disappeared back into the night. She took out her phone and called Luigi's. The line was busy, and she couldn't get through. Anxiety chafed her. She was just about to call Bart when her phone rang, and his number showed up on caller ID.
Hey.
What's going on, Anya? I just got a call from Central that you've been involved in a gunfight at an Italian restaurant.
It wasn't a gunfight. A gunfight is when both parties have guns and they shoot at each other. I didn't have a gun. They just shot at me.
Are you hurt?
No.
Where are you?
Do I need an attorney?
Why would you need an attorney?
I don't feel like being arrested. I didn't do anything wrong. They came into Luigi's.
Luigi's? Man, that was one of my favorite restaurants.
It was still standing when I left.
Who were the guys that came after you?
I think they were part of the same group that attacked me in Prague.
You think?
I didn't take the time to ask for references. Look, why don't you call someone and find out if Luigi and his employees are okay? I don't want to think any of them got hurt because of me.
I need to talk to you.
You can, just not at this moment. Find out about Luigi first, please.
All right.
And find out if Charlie is okay, too.
Charlie?
The homeless guy.
The homeless guy?
Yes.
What were you doing with him? I told you to stay away from him.
It's a long story, okay? Just find out about Luigi. I'll tell you all about it when I see you.
That old man could have led these guys to you.
I don't think so.
But Anya remembered how Charlie had disappeared right before the arrival of Saladin's men.
Are you at home?
No.
Good, don't go there.
I hadn't planned on it.
I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Thanks. And if Luigi is okay, tell him I didn't mean to bring any of that to his restaurant.
Anya snapped her phone closed because she knew Bart wouldn't want to let go. Graham brought the hot chocolate and left without a word. Anya gazed at a reflection in the window and thought about Rue and Garin. She hadn't had any contact with them in 2 days. A lot could go wrong in 2 days. One of the bullets struck Garin's Kevlar vest high on the back of his right shoulder and nearly knocked him down. He stumbled, but didn't fall. Muzzle flashes marked the positions of the shooters within the main house. Garin threw himself the last few feet across the ground, then popped up behind the trees.
Sir, we confirmed 5 men down inside. They won't be getting back up again.
Good. Ready?
Ready.
Garin picked another spot, closer to the main house now, and broke cover again. Salome stood near one of the windows and watched as a man ran out of the darkness across a moonlit patch of ground. His destination was a stand of trees only 30 yards from the main house.
Kill him.
Drake stood over a man with a machine gun in the window. Drake held a bolt-action sniper rifle and used the window frame for protection. The mercenary opened fire and unleashed a stream of bullets at the running man. Without warning, the mercenary jerked back into the room and sprawled on the floor. Another bullet tore through the window frame and dusted Drake in splinters. He drew back. Grimly, he worked the bolt to chamber a new round. Anger surged inside Salome. The painting wasn't supposed to be a fake, and they weren't supposed to get trapped in the house.
It's time to call in the air support, love. And time for us to get gone from this place.
Salome nodded. She didn't trust her voice. She hated retreating. In frustration, she listened to Drake make the call and silently cursed Rue for all she was worth.